This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikag Ndujaba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There's trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
So what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We are here, we will stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere. We're rich.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hingadena. Let's start the show with the news with Oglema.
Buju, everyone. Miigwech, and thank you for tuning in to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. My name is Oglema Ganu Ikwe. Today is Saturday, November 14th, 2020, and I'm here with some news and updates from Turtle Island this week. On Friday, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer and Michigan Department of Natural Resources Director Dan Eichinger notified Enbridge that a 1953 easement allowing it to operate dual pipelines in the Straits of Mackinac to transport petroleum and other products is being revoked and terminated. As reported by the Detroit Free Press, Whitmer and Eichinger also filed a lawsuit asking the Ingham County Circuit Court to recognize the validity of this action, citing violation of the public trust doctrine, given the unreasonable risk that continued operation of the dual pipelines poses to the Great Lakes. The state is terminating the easement based on Enbridge's persistent and incurable violations of the easement's terms and conditions. Here in Michigan, the Great Lakes define our borders, but they also define who we are as people, Whitmer said. Enbridge has routinely refused to take action to protect our Great Lakes and the millions of Americans who depend on them for clean drinking water and good jobs. They have repeatedly violated the terms of the 1953 easement by ignoring structural problems that put our Great Lakes and our families at risk. Most importantly, Enbridge has imposed on the people of Michigan an unacceptable risk of catastrophic oil spill into the Great Lakes that could devastate our economy and way of life. That's why we're taking action now and why I will continue to hold accountable anyone who threatens our Great Lakes and fresh water. The notice requires Enbridge to cease operations of the dual pipelines in the Straits by May 2021. Meanwhile, on Thursday, Minnesota regulators approved key permits for Enbridge Energy's planned Line 3 pipeline replacement. Activists had called on Democratic Governor Tim Walz to block any construction for the Canadian company's long-delayed multi-billion dollar project. Activist and water protector Tara Hauska updated her Facebook page on Thursday, stating, "Despite violating Ojibwe treaty rights, despite climate science and commitments to take a stand for future generations, Governor Tim Walz's administration has granted the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency 401 water certification to send Line 3 tar sands oil through 818 wetlands via the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Commissioner Laura Bishop." Continuing on with the post, she also added, "Even with today's permitting decision, Enbridge cannot begin construction until the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency approves Enbridge's construction stormwater permit, which requires the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to issue its Section 404 permit. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency must determine if Enbridge's construction stormwater plan protects lakes, streams, and wetlands from pollutant runoff. Since the construction stormwater permit is a general permit, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has up to 30 days to review and approve. The Associated Press reported that the approvals from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Department of Natural Resources clear the way for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to issue the remaining federal permits, which is expected to happen fairly quickly. The MPCA could then approve a final construction stormwater permit that's meant to protect surface waters from pollutant runoff. Andy Pearson, MN350's Midwest Tar Sands coordinator, in a statement about the permits said Line 3 is facing multiple court challenges by Native Nations, grassroots groups, and the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Pearson noted, this decision means that Enbridge may launch construction while the overall need and legality of the pipeline are being fought in court, including by a state agency. Other water protectors on the front lines in the fight against Enbridge's Line 3 in Minnesota expressed deep frustration at the decision and Minnesota Governor Walz's lack of action. In February 2019, Walz said publicly that projects like Line 3 don't just need a building permit to go forward. They also need a social permit. At the time, the governor was praised for working with the people not first and not with a foreign pipeline company by deciding to renew a challenge launched by its predecessor against the project. He also said that MN Commerce would petition the Public Utilities Commission to reconsider its decision on the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline replacement project, continuing a process begun by the Dayton administration. Projects that impact our environment and economy must follow the process, the law, and science. It is clear now that Governor Walz's wish for Line 3 to have a, quote, social permit was all talk and no action, Pearson declared in an interview with Common Dreams. This is a deeply unpopular pipeline that is a disaster for our climate, and it will be fought every step of the way. The climate justice movement will stop the pipeline, but the governor has made that unnecessarily harder. Tim Schaefer, director of Environment Minnesota's efforts to promote clean air, clean water, clean energy, and open spaces in Minnesota, called the plan nightmarish. We're beginning construction on an unnecessary, dangerous oil pipeline in the middle of a climate crisis, in the middle of a pandemic. Hundreds of out-of-state workers will come here over the next few months. What is the plan to keep people safe? Tim said on Twitter. You can get involved and take action by supporting the organizations fighting on the front lines of Line 3 in Minnesota, including Honor the Earth, MN350, and the GNU Collective. There are also several other organizations leading the way and that have been fighting this pipeline for years. You can visit their websites, donate, and take action today. As an update from our Mi'kmaq First Nations relatives in Canada, the nation that has received violent opposition to its moderate livelihood lobster fishery has launched a constitutional challenge against the province of Nova Scotia with, quote, hundreds of lawsuits planned against other fishermen, the federal government, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Ron Pink, a lawyer for the Sipikanakati First Nation, joined Chief Mike Sack on Thursday to provide an update on the band's legal plans, according to CBC News. The Sipikanakati fishery on Nova Scotia's southwest coast in St. Mary's Bay launched nearly 2 months ago on September 17th. It has faced tense and sometimes violent opposition by non-Indigenous commercial fishermen, including the swarming of two lobster facilities storing Mi'kmaq catches. The band has alleged hundreds of traps belonging to its members have been stolen, damaged, or destroyed by the commercial fishermen. As of Monday, 50% of Clearwater Seafoods has been acquired by a coalition, which includes member two First Nations, their new business partner Premium Brands, and a number of participating Mi'kmaq communities across Nova Scotia and Newfoundland. Founded in 1976, Clearwater Seafoods is one of North America's largest seafood companies and is the largest holder of shellfish licenses and quotas in Canada. The transaction means that the Mi'kmaq not only become 50% owners of the company, but also expect to hold Clearwater's Canadian fishing licenses within a fully Mi'kmaq-owned partnership. For a coronavirus update, the public health officials are projecting that the Navajo Nation will soon reach and maybe even surpass the level of COVID-19 cases that they had in April and May. Currently, there are about 13,000 positive cases on the Navajo Reservation, and they are about to surpass 600 deaths. It is more important than ever that everybody stay home, wear their masks, wash their hands, and be kind to one another. As always, Miigwech, and thank you for tuning in to Native Roots Radio. My name is Ogama Ganuikwe, and back to you, Wakanjahade.
Pinigigi Ogama for the news. We'll be right back. Up next, Winona LaDuke.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the Chat Now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm here with Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth. Thank you so much, Winona, for stopping in.
Yeah, no, happy to be here. And Minugisha, good day to you. Good day to you, Robert. Too bad about the governor and the MPCA, huh?
God, I don't know if I'm mad. I'm on an emotional roller coaster with this election and now this kind of coming up behind it and people not paying attention. I'm besides myself, really.
Well, you know, the governor had no reason to approve that permit. There is no way that Enbridge can protect our water. They said that all along. And, you know, and everything between taking like 900 million gallons of water out of our lakes to flush their lines out to the fact they're crossing our wild rice beds. That's some crazy stuff, you know, and this is not the time to approve a pipeline. No pipelines during pandemic, Governor. And, you know, I mean, it just baffles me. Like I was on Almanac on, you know, with the governor and he's talking about the pandemic and going to have only 10 people in, you know, you can only have 10 people in your social unit when you go out. And I was like, well, what about them 4,200 people you're importing from Texas and Wyoming and Louisiana?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're exempt or what? You know, just crazy. Why would you do this, Governor? Why would you do this? Bad idea, ma'am. Bad idea.
Right. I don't know what's going on. I mean, you know, what does Peggy say about this? Because I think I read in the Minneapolis paper is that she's against it. But is that old news or no news or is that something?
I think Peggy's against it. And the governor thinks it's still a good idea. And I just really can't even can't imagine why he does, think it's a good idea. You know, and there's going to be 23 workers and. We all know that Solar Bear and Bob Blake's going to have more than 23 workers by next year. I mean,
that's right.
You know, why would we do this? This isn't an employment thing. And, you know, and then in comparison, then you get the governor of Michigan, you know, Governor Whitmore, and she just withdrew their permits, their easements for the underneath the, you know, Straits of Mackinac.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what she said is that Enbridge has imposed on the people of Michigan an unacceptable risk of a catastrophic oil spill in the Great Lakes that could devastate our economy and way of life. That's why we're taking action now. And I will continue to hold accountable anyone who threatens our Great Lakes and fresh water. So there's a tale of two governors. You know, here's a governor that said, I'm going to protect our water from a risky Canadian corporation. And here's another one is, you know, governors throwing the people, the tribes, and civil society under the bus. For Enbridge and their 4,200 workers in their, you know, man camps, which, you know, basically they just bought up Hill City, bought up a couple other, you know, major retreat centers and horrible, horrible situation. I'm so disappointed in the governor. And, you know, one, let's just talk about should put a stay on anything while we're in a pandemic. You know, there's only 4 ICU beds in Aiken County and 800 workers are getting disgorged there. That makes no sense. Our tribes are already, you know, being, you know, challenged with COVID. And then two, I mean, why would you issue a permit when your state's appealing this whole certificate of need? And we've shown that Enbridge doesn't even need this pipeline. It's about greed. It's not about need. So baffling to me, Governor, and too bad you want to, you know, cause such a wreck in northern Minnesota. And didn't he notice the vote?
Yes.
I mean, didn't he notice the Native people votes count? I mean, what are we called? Something else? Is that right? We're called something else?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought that up because we're starting a new show here, and it's going to be called Native Roots Radio Presents the Native Wave. And I'm telling you, we have a wave, and we're staying engaged with our people because we really do count, like you just said.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so look at this. In the deep north, Clearwater County votes 71% in favor of Donald Trump, but Rice Lake, 72% for Joe Biden,
mm-hmm.
right? You know what I'm saying? Monoman County is like 50%, but 75% of the Native votes are for Democrats. And so, you know, it's like, take a little look. You know, Red Lake delivered about 2,000 some votes mm-hmm. to the Democrats. And, you know, take a look at who we are, how we're changing elections, getting elected, you know, and influencing things. And let's make a multiracial democracy.
Yeah.
One that respects Native people, too. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That's right. Hey, so Winona, what kind of what are we looking for in a sense of a call to action? I know the reason why.
Well,
go ahead. Sorry.
You know, come Thanksgiving weekend, we're going to start inviting people up. Welcome water protectors. That's one of the pages we got. And you know, there's 300 miles of pipe that hasn't been built, and half of it is on public land. Public land means that's my land and your land, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we're going to give you all a pretty good map. We're going to show you where all the man camps are. We're going to show you where all their facilities are. And, you know, it's a COVID-friendly pastime of water protector tourism. You can come in small groups or larger groups, mask up, and come to the north. You know, bring your skis, get out and about, and let's just start looking at what's going on up here. And, you know, you want to get out of the city anyway. So we'll be inviting people to the deep north. You know, it's going to be time to stop a pipeline. You know, people have been waiting for it, but we all hope the system will work. I mean, I spent 7 years trying to get the system to work, for Christ's sake.
I know.
You know, and now I'm looking at, I seen Enbridge was unloading a whole bunch of equipment in Hubbard County at the Hubbard County Police Office. I saw that, you know, so Enbridge is unloading equipment for cops. But I'm gonna go up there and face them because I ain't afraid of them. You know, I'm done. We're done. I'm gonna stand up for my water, and I think a lot of other people are too.
Absolutely. Can you give that website again?
It's at Honor the Earth and at stopline3.org, but it's called Welcome Water Protectors.
Wow.
Welcome Water Protectors, and we're just reworking some of the maps to make sure that information is accurate. There's a lot of water protector friendly businesses in the north. You know, 70,000 mm-hmm. people testified against this pipeline. There's all kind of people that don't want this pipeline up north. And let's support those businesses, and let's support water protector businesses. And
mm-hmm.
and let's go, team. We'll give you some, you know, outlines on it. You know, keep pressuring. And then, you know, but really, you know, the governor just shouldn't have done this. So I'm mad, I'm sad, and I'm dressing warm.
Exactly, and we're prepared. We remember how to camp from Standing Rock, and believe me, this is a lot closer for us people in the Twin Cities to come up and join you in this righteous battle.
Yep. Well, this, you know, we'll keep you posted, and there's a lot of other groups working on it. You know, I'm not in charge of all the Indians and all the resistance. You know, as I pointed out to the governor and to many others, you know, the Catholics closed down the pipeline. The librarians right. closed down the pipeline.
Right.
You know, so organize your own delegations, Catholics and librarians. You go.
Wow. Well,
we'll give you some maps.
Oh, thank exactly. Thank you so much for stopping in. And I know you're super busy. And wow, we just support you here at Native Roots Radio. And I know people are really excited to listen to your truth on this show. So I just want to give you a big peeny geegee. And we can always do the show live up there, too.
Yep. Yep. Well, make sure that we can broadcast well from the front lines. And you know, let's just rock this, man. Let's just continue rocking this and move to the next economy because we're all ready. Governor Wallace is sadly still in the last one, but we're gonna help him move along.
Oh, thank you so much for stopping in.
That
was Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Each week we have a great update from House Representative Mary Kunish Podine. Let's take a listen.
How Matake Yape Buju. It's State Representative Mary Kunish, soon to be Senator Kunish. And boy, oh boy, can you tell it's Native American Heritage Month. Today is November 13th, Friday the 13th. For some, it means bad luck. But for my family, it meant the eighth daughter in my family, the birth of the eighth daughter. So I'd like to wish my sister, Patrice Kunish, a birthday today. So Native American Heritage Month, wow, it really started out this week. this week I spent so much time on Native issues. It was actually pretty cool. But it started out on Monday. I found a link to a BBC, the British Broadcasting Company Corporation. It was a podcast about missing and murdered Indigenous women. And in this podcast, Sheila Lamb, the Cloquet City Council member, and myself, along with MMIW warrior Anita LaCasey, were featured in it. And it was quite moving. There were some pretty hard stories that were told, but it is very interesting how this is such a global issue, and folks from around the world take note of the work that we do here in Minnesota. And I can tell you that our MMIW report will be out in December, and I can't wait to share that with you. But if you want to listen to this podcast, just Google MMIW and BBC, and you should be able to find it. And then I was invited by Brandon Alker to be in a meeting that discussed how to bring the entire University of Minnesota system into compliance around the American Indian Student Advisory Board. That it is mandated by the legislature that if 10 or more students ask for this to be convened, the University of Minnesota and each campus is compelled to create this American Indian Student Advisory Board. And that hasn't happened for decades. And Brandon has been working so hard. He has a long list of emails and reminders to various University of Minnesota presidents and others over the years. And I think the University of Minnesota is finally on the ball and being proactive about this. And they've been out of compliance for decades, as I said. And so we had a good meeting, and it sounds like the University of Minnesota is going to be working hard and intentionally in bringing back these advisory boards, because it hasn't been in compliance for so long. And then followed that meeting was a gathering of the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors and Family Preservation Subcommittee. And those folks are organizers and child welfare workers and stakeholders from a wide variety of American Indian services and organizations in the metro area. And I just want to say, wow, what an incredible group of people who are working so hard to ensure that our families are preserved and reunited in so many ways. So Wopala and Miigwech to Sadie Hart for putting that together. And then Tuesday was the quarterly MIAC, Minnesota Indian Affair Council meeting, where all of our tribal leaders and representatives from different commissions and committees within our state government meet. And they're able to share issues and thoughts and ideas and come together in a good way around discussion and how we can work better with our tribes and with all of Minnesota. And much was shared and much was taken away. But during that meeting, the White Earth Band of Ojibwe submitted a written letter to Laura Bishop, who is the commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And in it, they specifically addressed the 401 permit for Line 3 and Bridges Line 3. And in this letter, the White Earth Band of Ojibwe requested that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency deny the 401 permit for the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline corridor that they say that we need for so many reasons. They requested that the regulatory process be suspended in light of the world pandemic and crisis of COVID. And then they listed three reasons three concerns that they had specifically that the MPCA did not take into account. And these are scientific problems that directly bear on the project. And one is the cumulative impact that this project's 212 stream crossings and thousands of acres of wetland crossing will have on water quality. And they describe it as death by a thousand cuts. That's pretty profound. And then number two, they're very concerned about the downstream effects of oil spills. And number three, of course, the effect that this is going to have directly to climate change. And so the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, including collaborators from the six bands of the MCT, along with White Earth, in partnership with Honor the Earth, developed a tribal cumulative impact assessment. And that was filed and sent in and shared. And then we know that at the end of the day, that permit, the 401 permit, was approved, much to the dismay of so many people, so many organizations here in Minnesota. And I guess I'm really sad to say that our governor made a statement in support of the MPCA's decision to grant the certification to Enbridge. It was good to know that our Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan responded that her opposition to Line 3 has not changed at all. And so that could make for some interesting conversation at the Capitol in the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's offices. And then we ended the day I ended the week on Thursday with an honoring of our Tiwahe grantees. And if you are not familiar with Tiwahe, Tiwahe is an organization that whose mission really is to allow access and support to opportunity and researchers, resources. It provides leadership and network, healing and support for American Indian people who live a culturally centered, economically independent and healthy lives. And it's grounded in sovereignty and indigenous worldviews. And it's really great that we had 21. Oh, I'm looking here. There were 21 American Indian Family Empowerment Program graduates who received grants. They weren't perhaps as large as everyone would have really wished, but at least we were able to award these cash grants to those that asked for it in the sense and the honor of giving and generosity, which is our American Indian way. And then there was one Oyate leadership grant that went out. And so that was a really great way to spend the end of this busy week. And so happy to be able to be a part of Tiwahe and some of these other organizations that really make the effort to support our American Indian tribes. I have to give a shout out to Chef Yazzie over at the Gathering Cafe at the American Indian Center. He's been so busy working on providing meals, good meals to our elders. And so if you are in a position to donate food, or maybe you've gone hunting and you've got some good venison to share, go ahead and contact them and maybe see what you can do to help provide food and nutrition for our elders. That's for sure. The last thing I'm going to just sort of remind you and ask any of you who might be interested, the University of Minnesota has some regent seats that are going to be opening up here. And if you aren't familiar with what a regent is, the University of Minnesota has It's sort of like a school board, I want to call it. And they are an advisory group to the University of Minnesota. And unfortunately, we have never had an American Indian regent in the University of Minnesota system. So if you know of anybody who might be interested in becoming a University of Minnesota regent, the regent is an unpaid volunteer who serves 6 years, and those years are staggered. 4 of the 12 regent seats are open for election every 2 years. So we have 4 seats that are open. The ideal candidate will have a deep interest in higher education and an understanding of the role of the University of Minnesota as a major land grant and research institution. They would like you to have experience and a willingness to learn about governance and oversight of large, complex institutions such as the U of M, a strong sense of fairness and appreciation for diversity, good listening skills, and an awareness of the importance of the university's education mission in these challenging economic times. And as I said, there has never been an American Indian University of Minnesota region, and it is high time. Remember that most of these universities are built on Dakota and Anishinaabe lands. The University of Minnesota Morris was actually an Indian boarding school, if any of you didn't know that. And when it became the University of Minnesota, there was an agreement that any student that is an enrolled member or can prove descendancy from a Native Americans are able to go there tuition-free. That means students can go to the University of Minnesota, if you are of Native of descent of any kind, tuition-free. And I can tell you a number of my nieces and nephews, as well as my son, have taken advantage of that, and it has made such a difference for them. So we need 4 regents, 1 in District 1, Southern Minnesota, District 4 in Ramsey County, District 6, which is the Northwest Metro and St. Cloud, and District 7, and that's in Western Minnesota. The application deadline is December 4th. You don't have much time, but the application is available at the, if you Google Region Candidate Advisory Council, RCAC, I think it's rcac.leg.mn, Region Candidate Advisory Council dot, and then it's leg.mn. Please consider it. Please look into it. If you know somebody that you think would make an excellent regent, please share that with them. My time is up. I'm over. Everybody take care. Mask up, wash your hands, and take care of each other. Bless you.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hare. Each week, we check in with Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350, Rise, and also a co-producer of The Native Wave on AM 950. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Pilot. It's always a pleasure to be on the show, and just sitting here today wondering what the future brings us. We got some harmful news day before yesterday on Thursday. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota DNR allowed for Enbridge to have their 401 water permit, and they're just really close to starting construction here. And I guess what's holding that back right now is the Army Corps 404 permit. And so, you know, what is really disheartening about this is, you know, being, you know, Native people, and we have an administration, the current administration, that has an executive order, 1924, government-to-government relationships, and, you know, building on that foundation of, you know, respect and being heard, you know, listening to our 11 Minnesota tribes. And yet we see line three, you know, there's laws being circumvented, there's science being denied, again, treaties are being dishonored, and there's no, you know, conversation about the social permit, because we know way more people oppose line three, and those that that supported it basically were union workers and employees of Enbridge, and we've seen that at the hearings. So obviously there was so much money spent into lobbying, and you know, we know what happens when, you know, we get elected officials that turned a blind eye to science, to the social justice, and to treaty responsibility. And it's like so disheartening to hear this decision made, especially when we have Native representation at the government or the governor's level. And yeah, I just don't know how to feel. And so because our hearts were broke and we were in shock, we decided, just a handful of us, to go to the Clearwater River yesterday and pray for the water. And we kept COVID safety in mind. And we had a sacred fire and we prayed for the water. We had a hand drum there. And we kept it simple. And we just prayed and had good conversation about where we're going to go next. And so, well, eventually the cops showed up because
That's what they do.
Fire. Yeah, exactly. That's what Dawn said. She goes, oh, they always got to show up. And honestly, it took three cop cars for three people. Our drum had left and another young fellow. But the issue was our not having a permit for a fire. And I was like, well, this is a sacred fire. And we had it above the ground fire, you know. And the whole point of being there yesterday was exercising our treaty rights. And that's exactly what we were doing with that sacred fire. We were there under ceremony praying for water. And yet they have to show up and try to break that down. But, you know, in the end, it worked out respectfully. And we did not put out that fire. And Shemek, Bob Shemek, an elder, he's been coming with us and being a good support and, you know, has a lot of knowledge to share with us. But anyways, he told them, we're not putting this fire out. And you can give me a ticket. To make a long story short, they never did make us put out the fire, and we just had to move our vehicles off the highway. And thank God I got four-wheel drive. But yeah, it was a good day yesterday, and it was really peaceful. It was just, again, you know, just praying for the water and thinking forward. So, you know, as hard as we worked electing, you know, during the election and electing, you know, some climate champions, you know, people like Mary Kunish Bodine, who was making a public stand, that gives me hope that we can still continue forward to fight this. And, you know, like I said, there's going to be the 404 permit that still has to be approved, but we're also told that might be a speedy decision. And what we do know is Enbridge is already training people. Fond du Lac is already in orientation. We got some local people here, some relatives working for the pipeline. They start their training on Monday. And so those are signs that Enbridge has probably got information that we don't got. And it's really disturbing to know that they're out there getting ready to do this and rape Earth Mother more and not pay attention to, you know, the climate impacts. And it's more than apparent that we're living in a climate crisis right now. And why can't we just honor our relatives and make something meaningful out of that 1924 executive order? And, you know, Robert, that's a short term. That's just an order under Governor Walson. If he's not elected next term, that just blows off in the wind. But our intention is to have that move into legislation and give it some meaning, because right now there's not much meaning to it, especially after they approved that 401 permit for Enbridge and did nothing to respect the treaties and protect the tribes, the northern tribes of Minnesota. So it's kind of weighing heavy on a lot of us right now, and our spirits are kind of crushed. And we haven't given up, though, Robert. We're never going to give up.
Well, we just got to give a shout out to the governor of Gretchen Whitmer, who's the governor of Michigan, who stopped Line 5 from Enbridge. So we need to mirror her action. She just did that yesterday. And so we need to resist and divest, and we need to, camping again. Up north is a lot closer than North Dakota, and just to give everybody a quick history lesson is that Native Roots Radio started because of the Dakota Access Pipeline and all the misinformation that was going on out there. So we're going to keep on top of this. And Nancy, it's always great to hear from you, and keep a chin up. You know, I think we have a lot of momentum as Native Americans,
right.
And especially after this election, and to keep things going.
Right. And, you know, we're going to continue to be the good trouble. And, you know, and I'm really thankful for, you know, our allies like Jen McEwen. She also made a public shout out for, you know, the mm-hmm. water and the Line 3 decision. And she's just newly elected CD7 Senate. And I'm really honored to have an ally like her publicly speak up, Mary Kunish Bodine. And I'm sure there's more. I've just been so busy in the last day. I didn't get to see all the things that are out there. But, you know, what we need to do is, like, get inside of the system and keep electing relatives and allies like we've seen here in 2020, build on that in the future and get inside that system. Because you know what we're doing, Robert? We're learning how to play that game. We're going to get in there and we're going to break it down in the best way we know how, and that's the good trouble. The good trouble I'm talking about.
That's great. Pini Gigi for being on and all the work you do up in the deep north. That was Nancy Bolio, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, couldn't cut people.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, Hour 2. This show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people and our relatives. We are the resistance. We are awake. All things are our relatives. What we do to everything we do to ourselves. All is one black elk. I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot. It says that right here, Wendy. Wendy has been an animal advocate for many years. She's a volunteer Minnesota State Council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level. And thank you so much for speaking about our sacred animals each week, Wendy. Tell us your name.
It is my pleasure. Thank you, Robert. Yes, my name is Hana Jihihani, and that means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega here, Curtis. So as always, thank you very much, Curtis. I have a newsletter here that I receive like every 2 months from the Sierra Club. For those who do not know, the Sierra Club is an environmental organization. And they have chapters in all 50 states. So I have the November-December issue here, and I have an article that I want to just refer to, and this is by Rachel Neuer, and we have Lucy coming in to say hi, but that's okay. So this article is titled, We Need to Talk. The Pandemic Offers a Chance to Reset the Human-Wildlife Relationship. And I'm just going to read the first paragraph here, and then Robert and you and I can talk about this. Whether we or they like it or not, the creatures we share on this planet are unquestionably tied to us. A fact laid bare by the COVID-19. And what we're going to talk about here today is how the COVID-19 pandemic has changed things for animals and for us. And there's some bad things and there's some good things that happen. So just for instance, let's say, Robert, like we have these squirrels that live in our backyard, right? And we have like a little house back there and they live back there. And we, for I don't know how many years, we just kind of throw out seeds and nuts for them, right? And there's generations of these squirrels that live there. And what happens is the new little squirrels that just know us to feed them this food, that's all they know, right? So if we were just to move or to leave, what would they do and what would happen? So exactly what happened in New York City, right? When the pandemic happened, they had the lockdown and what happened was all the restaurants shut down, right? So all these rats who they ate all this good food, right, from all the restaurants, didn't have all that food. So what did they do?
Wow.
Yeah. I just read it. It's in this article. So what did all the rats do? Well, what they did was they finally started eating the bait and the poison, like the decon pellets, right? Because if a rat had a choice between a decon pellet and a piece of filet mignon, what were they going to do, right? Eat the filet mignon.
Well, if it's medium rare.
Only if it's medium rare. Also, what happened was the rats ate the poison, and then they did cannibalism too. Which is kind of gross, which is kind of gross. But what happened was it kind of got rid of millions of rats in New York. So that could be a good thing or a bad thing. I like all animals, so I'm sad for the rats, but maybe there were just too many of them. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, there's another story. In Nara, Japan, millions of people would come to this area in Japan to visit these 1,400. They were like semi-tame deer. And there were shops around this area that sold rice, bran, and wheat deer crackers. So the people would buy these deer crackers. Deer crackers, and they would feed the deer. Right? These 1,400 semi-tame deer would come and the tourists would feed them these crackers. But then when COVID hit and there was a lockdown and the tourists stopped coming, all these 1,400 deer, what were they going to do? They were used to eating. They were like almost addicted to these deer crackers, right?
The tourists, not tourists. The New York accent came out. Tourists.
Hey.
I just want people to
understand. Hey, what about it? So all these deer, what the deer would do, that they walked around to the shops asking the people for the crackers, and they would go to the residential areas also, right? But what happened was the authorities in the area discovered that there was twice as many emergency calls because of the deer, because they weren't like combined, in this one area. Now they were like all around looking for food and going all over the place.
So people would hit them with the car, is that what you mean?
Hit
them
with the car, get into trouble, hit with bikes.
Oh, geez.
But one of the things that the residents noticed about the deer was that their droppings weren't watery and gross. It changed, now that they were eating like grass and stuff that they were supposed to eating, the deer, their stools resembled firm black beans, just the way they should have, right? So the crackers were not really the good diet for the deer.
Even though they said deer after crackers.
Right. Well, the shopkeepers wanted to sell the crackers because
they
made money. There's also a story on the Cayman Islands. Tourists would go to this area of the Cayman Islands to see wild stingrays and feed them there. So they would get on a boat, they'd go to this area, and they would feed the stingrays. And then after the shutdown, what happened was the people who lived on the Cayman Islands in this specific area were so worried that the stingrays, since they weren't going to getting fed anymore, they were just going to leave, right? And then what would happen when the tourists came back after COVID, the stingrays wouldn't be there. And this is why the tourists came, to see the stingrays.
Tourists.
So what happened was, hey, what about it?
Forget about a tourist.
Tourist. Robert, that's how I talk. You want some coffee? So what happened was the people who lived in the area, even though there was a shutdown, the people were sneaking out at night to feed the stingrays so that they would stay in the area and wouldn't leave. And then finally they got caught. But then the people pleaded with the authorities saying that we're going to lose our tourist business and everything if the stingrays don't stay. And even though they're wild stingrays and they can go come and go as they please, the people wanted the stingrays to stay. So then the authorities said, okay, let's do this carefully and wear masks and we could go back and feed the stingrays so that they'll stay. And then the story about, remember the dolphins, there were stories about dolphins being in Venice, right, in the water. That was fake. Oh. That was fake news. I was kind of hoping that that would have been... not fake, because I kind of like that story, but that was fake news. And the other thing that was fake also was that there was a story about a herd of elephants raided a Chinese village for booze, and they all drank the booze and got drunk, all the elephants, but that was another fake story. But anyway, what I'm trying to say and what this article really says, and it's really, really in-depth, and I wish I had like a whole hour to talk about it, because... we really, like you always say in the beginning of the show, is that we're all connected. Mm-hmm. And the animals are connected to us and we're connected to them. And what happens to us happens to them. And we just need to be aware of it and just, you know, take care of the animals and be there for them. And COVID-19 has done a lot with our relationship with animals. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, we've had animals coming up and coming out. Remember the coyote on River Boulevard and things like that. Things are switching for them, too.
Yeah.
And we have our blackbirds that come in and they want deshelled nuts.
They do want deshelled nuts. And also in like Yellowstone Park and Yosemite Park also, the animals are more free to roam when the parks are closed. So they've seen a lot more wildlife and animals walking around to, you know, so they don't have to avoid us humans anymore. So.
Yeah, really interesting.
That is interesting.
That's totally interesting. Well, thank you, Wendy, for all you do for our sacred animals and giving us this weekly report. It's very important for us to, especially us urban Indians here, to be really aware of what's happening around Turtle Island.
Thanks.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm here with Robert Lilligren, one of our great regulars here. Robert, introduce yourself and let's speak your truth, because there's a lot going on here in Minneapolis and all over Turtle Island.
Yeah, bonjour, Indianamigaladuk. I'm Robert Lilligren. I'm a citizen of the White Earth Ojibwe Nation. I'm CEO of the Native American Community Development Institute, NACDI, in South Minneapolis, that helps promote the vision of an American Indian cultural corridor on East Franklin. I'm also, a Metropolitan Council member, a part of our metro government, our Seven County Metro government, and I chair the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, MUD. It's a 50-year-old leadership forum here in the metro area.
Well, we're really excited to have you, because you have like the pulse of the of our community. You really do.
Hardly.
Come on now.
I would.
But I, you know, one of the things too that I'd like you to bring up is that you were a city council member and a couple firsts there, and just give our audience a little knowledge about that too before we get going.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. I always feel like I'm dragging out my 17 titles or whatever, but yeah, so I was elected to the Minneapolis City Council, served there for 12 years as vice president of the council for all those years. I was the first tribal citizen ever elected to the city council or any office within the city of Minneapolis, followed by my good friend, the Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, who ran for Minneapolis School Board in 2004. So I've always tried to really use what I've learned about politics, about government, to really help bring a new generation along, especially working with Native candidates, women of color candidates. And I made that determination early on, because when I first ran, I was running against the system. I ran against the party endorsement. And so no sort of establishment politicos would help me, you know. And I thought that was really frustrating. And so I made it my determination that if someone asks me for help, I'll give them help, even if I wouldn't end up supporting them in the end. But for me, it's a strong value to share what I know.
Yeah, to give it away, to keep it, too. I mean, that's the Native way, too, is to give things freely. Like, when next time I'll see you, I'll say, I really like that jacket for me, and then you're supposed to give it to me.
But, and then I'll say, well, I really like that car, Robert.
And I'll say, it was a gift. I can't give it to you, sorry. hey, but let's get serious here for just a second here.
Yeah.
A lot going on, and this show has really been dedicated so far to this point about what's happening on Line 3. I know you got a little insight about that.
Well, I don't really have that much insight. I mean, I'm glad you're focusing on it. This is what we should be talking about. You know, it's really interesting to see, you know, Line 3 is right at the fulcrum of, you know, shifting awareness, shifting priorities, shifting fuel sources. You know, we know we can't continue to rely on fossil fuels like this. We know that Line 3 will be obsolete soon, mm-hmm. and we should be investing those kinds of resources into alternative fuels. And so that line happens to be right at the tipping point. And then the Native people and allies who are opposing it are right there in the hot spot. You know, this is bigger than Line 3. This has to do with the health of our planet, our future, and I'm so awed by the Native people who are really stepping up to oppose Line 3.
Well, one of the things too is that it goes across Native water up there, and it's close to that, and water's life. And this show, Native Roots Radio, is originally started because of all the misinformation about Standing Rock that we were seeing nationally and locally. And so we remember how to camp, and we know it's a lot closer up there than it is to North Dakota. So we are a little upset. But, you know, one of the things, the bright light that's come out of this is your dear friend and our supporter, Peggy Flanagan, had a statement today.
Yeah, I feel so bad for her. You know, I mean, she's been clear all along that she opposes Line 3. She's been consistent in that position. She's never wavered. My guess is, as the decision-making process has gone along and there's been more and more demands for a more thorough process, that Lieutenant Governor has had a role in sort of convincing, swaying the governor into making more and more detailed surgical kinds of review of the application. But mm-hmm. she still opposes it, and this is really the first time I've heard her ever oppose the governor since they kicked off their campaign at the Minneapolis American Indian Center on Franklin, on the Cultural Corridor, mm-hmm. way back when. They have been in lockstep. They promote a co-governing model, and so this is really her first time that she's come out publicly against him. And I mean, her whole statement is one sentence, and it's very clear, and I'll just read it maybe, Robert. So she put out the statement: as many people know, I have long expressed opposition to the Line 3 project, and my position has not changed.
There you have
it. So I'm sure it's hard on her, you know, as a Native sister, seeing this happen, being unwittingly or unwillingly maybe being part of it, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think we really need to support the lieutenant, to support Peggy, and mm-hmm. you know, and understand that this is painful for her too.
Yeah, and she's a human being, so I think that's really a really, really good point that we should accentuate, mm-hmm. is that she is a human and she has emotions, and she knows and where she stands. One of the interesting things, Robert, is just the day before this, Michigan's governor stopped Enbridge Line 3, or Line 5, excuse me. And,
Line 5.
So that's kind of interesting. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, too, is partially like the presidential campaign and how the Native vote came out. And we have power, and I think a lot of the organizations that I've been talking to, including yours, is keeping this going because we have every 2 year cycle.
Right. So I mean, that's just the Native vote. This presidential election was pivotal in a number of really key races. Michigan being one of them, Nevada, Arizona, for sure. And the beauty is we have data that is showing this and data that can be shared broadly. So we're not sort of clocked in under the something else category when we're looking at voter turnout. And both elections are close. Presidential elections are very tight these days. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of states, it is the native vote that can swing them. And this election cycle, there was a much broader awareness of it. A number of national groups brought native vote strategies together. We had what was called the seven state strategy, mm-hmm. and seven states where the native vote could swing it, Minnesota being one of those. There was just a lot of national coordination around strategy, resources, and data. And I think that will continue to reverberate forward, where now the native vote isn't to be neglected. It's something to be courted. And we had, up to the presidential election, actually investing in the native vote, investing in the urban Indian vote, which is where a majority of native votes are anyway. And so it's 2020 is a game changer as far as elections go and native involvement. Look at all the native candidates you were hosting on your shows that were running just in Minnesota. Nationally, it's in the hundreds that ran.
Yeah, 130, I thought I heard.
130, that's the number I heard, too. So something like that, you know. So that's incredible. Well, so that engagement.
I think, too, one of the things that we as, and you as a leader and in the know, we should really be talking year-round almost about, we should be talking about the elections, but also have some kind of conversation about the census. And not just the year before it or 6 months before,
right.
But just a talking circle about how important the census is, because again, our numbers are all over the place.
Right. And that is huge. The census is huge. You know, I was on the Minneapolis City Council during the 2010 census. And we had a federal government that was very interested in seeing an accurate count, especially in cities, especially with brown people.
Mm-hmm.
And so under the Obama administration, they invested in the census. Now, under the Trump administration, it was exactly the opposite.
Yep.
They tried to starve the census, make it difficult. And so under the Biden administration, he'll be able to start setting sort of the rules and what the 2030 census will look like. But I think you're exactly right, Robert. Now is the time to be talking about it in the community, about the importance of being counted, for sure, and
mm-hmm.
Being engaged. And my organization, NACDI, the organization I work for, do quite a bit of census outreach work. And I remember I was just talking to Elizabeth Day in our office, who mm-hmm. manages our census work. And she said she couldn't sleep the night after it was announced that the census was closing the next day, you know, and so it's just like, what can we do? And they roused, our organizers, and they had almost 100 more respondents to the census just in that one day. I think it was 96
mm-hmm.
in that one day. So they did something.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't just worry about it. They did something.
Yeah, that's sometimes the best thing to do is to keep those hands busy. You know, one of the things, Robert, too, I'd like to end with the show on a happy note. No, I'm just kidding. Let's talk a little bit about COVID here, because,
you
know, that is not a happy note. And the numbers are numbing, mind numbing.
They are. And the acceleration of the infections was just so shocking. I heard just last night in Minnesota alone predicting 100,000 more infections before Thanksgiving. And I mean, that's just such an acceleration. And Native people are so much more negatively impacted, so much more likely to be hospitalized, so much more likely to require intensive care, so much more likely to die.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be protecting all of our generations. And the drivers for infection are what we love to do. Be together as family, social gatherings, you know. There's a generational piece here. It's younger social people who are carrying it back to their families.
Yes.
And so we just need to,
18 to 35.
And so we just need to beware. We need to protect our elders, protect our youth, mask up, socially distance, don't cluster together in gatherings, homes, and just, we got to rough it out, man. It's going to be hard, but We got to do it for the future. There are too few of us to be losing more to COVID.
Wow, exactly. Well, Robert, thank you so, so much for stopping in and speaking your truth and letting everybody all over Turtle Island know what's happening in the Twin Cities. And, you know, right on to Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Really, thank you so much.
Here, here. Thanks for having me, Robert. It's always a pleasure.
Peeny Geegee. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Robert Lilligren. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
Hey, we got our next guest is Maggie Lorenz, who's executive director of Lower Phalen Creek Project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she does some awesome videos, too. We keep up with her on Facebook. We keep up on Facebook with her, and she has funny posts and serious posts, too. But I can't, I have to every once in a while check on her old post about her husband scream teaches. And you said I do the same thing.
Scream teaches. Yeah. So it's funny because Robert teaches from home. He does the distance learning.
And Barry does too.
And so does Barry. And they're very loud. So when they're on and they're in the screen, even though they're in their own room with the door shut, you could hear them throughout the house, like talking really loud. So they scream teach. So, and Robert, you do that too.
Oh, easy. Anyways, hey, let's get Maggie Lorenz on. Welcome to Pilot's Progressive Party, Maggie.
Hey, Robert. Hey, Wendy.
Hey.
How's it going? How are you holding up here in this last week? I know we were all nervous and about our elections and people. How are you and your family holding up?
Oh, gosh. It's much better now. You know, I didn't realize how much stress I was feeling from the, you know, weeks leading up to the election. And then, of course, when the election kind of dragged out for a few days. But I definitely felt like a very noticeable difference in my body and my just feeling of centeredness once all that was over. So, you know, it's just good to check in with yourselves, and self-care is so important. But, wow, that was tough, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Glad things worked out the way they did, but it was a nail biter.
Yeah, definitely. And also the state elections. And, you know, it's funny, too. Our work is now just beginning too. So it isn't over. We still are like you and, the people out there and Wendy and myself, our work is just starting again.
Oh yeah. Yep. Definitely, you know, a lot of work ahead of us, but, good to take a moment to just kind of celebrate, that moment and kind of the, pause, I guess, you know, this kind of lull we can take in our like political drama that's been going on for the last 4 years. So
Maggie, I want you to tell our audience what you do, because we were just having our own private conversation, but maybe some people that are listening now on the radio, Pilot's Progressive Party, don't know what you do. And can you tell our audience what you do?
Yeah, well, right now I work with an organization called Lower Phalen Creek Project. We're a 501c3 nonprofit serving the east side of St. Paul in Minnesota. And we focus on environmental conservation, restoration programs, environmental education, and more recently, cultural connections and healing work. And that really stemmed out of a major shift in the way the organization was doing its work as an environmental nonprofit, because we just became Native-led in 2019. So prior to that, the organization was founded in 1997 and became a 501c3 in 2011, but did all of that as a majority white-led organization, which is not rare in the environmental conservation world. So, but because of the parks and green spaces on the east side of St. Paul are home to some really important, significant sites such as Wakan Tipi, a Dakota sacred site, mm-hmm. a cave, a burial mound site at Indian Mounds mm-hmm. Regional Park. There are numerous village sites along the river, Mississippi River, going through St. Paul. And because of that, Lower Phalen Creek leadership decided it really needed to remake itself as a Native-led organization, which is how I got involved. And when the organization achieved that status in 2019 is when I was brought on board as the executive director. So that's a little bit about the organization and the kinds of work that we do. But our biggest project right now is the development of Wakan Tipi Center, which is a cultural and environmental center that will take the name of the sacred site Wakan Tipi mm-hmm. and be located in the same city, 27-acre nature sanctuary where that cave site is. And it will serve as an interpretive center to not only honor and protect that site as a sacred site, but provide some education, history, programming, cultural arts and heritage programming to the community from there. So we are, you know, this is a nearly $8 million project, $7.7 million. And we've raised 6.4, so we're well on our way, and it's really exciting time to be part of this work.
So go ahead, Wendy.
Maggie, I remember you were on one of our shows in the past, and you were telling us about one of the areas, and I can't remember the name of the place, where you did a really big cleanup, like you found like bathtubs and like really crazy stuff. Could you tell our audience about that if you remember or know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yep. So that is the same place, the Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary. And, you know, the way our organization started out back in 1997, this was kind of like, you know, the height of the kind of Earth Day and kind of like heal the world, you know, kind of feeling that was going on in the United States at that time. There was a lot of environmental work going on then, and that's kind of the era and the feeling in the nation at the time about environmental work. And so this group came together and decided, you know, there was this 27 acres down by the river, the Mississippi River, and it was abandoned railroad land. And this group decided, you know, why don't we clean this up? Because it had turned into kind of an unofficial city dump, and people would bring things like their old bathtubs or refrigerators, couches, huge things like that, and just throw their garbage down there, their tires and everything. And so that was the first project this organization took on. And yeah, we removed, I say we, but I wasn't with the organization at the time, but the organization removed about 50 tons of trash from that site. And then an additional like 13 tons of toxic soil because you know, the whole area down there had been industry and railroad, so there was a lot of polluted soils down there, so there had to be a lot of remediation done. All that amazing reclamation work happened in the late 90s, early 2000s, and the park was established and opened to the public in 2005. And so it was through that process of doing all of that work when the organization had a legal obligation to work with the tribes to do what's called a Section 106 review. And that's because of the proximity of this site to what I mentioned before, Indian Mounds Regional Park and the burial mounds there. And so because it was in such a close proximity to these cultural resources, it triggered this requirement that the organization had to work with the tribes to study the site and see if there was any cultural resource value there. And that's when this whole story about Wakan Tipi became started to unfold for the leaders of the organization at the time who weren't aware of that history. And that's kind of, you know, what led to what we're doing now, which is, you know, building this center so that we can bring this story and really, you know, the community, the Dakota community, lifts that the community up in a way that doesn't relegate our people to the past, but also talks about the ways in which we are currently contemporary people and contributing to society and all the ways that we have contributed to, you know, the American story.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So before we get going to, is there a place that people can donate for this project? Is there a website? Help us out here.
Yeah. So Lower Phalen Creek, P-H-A-L-E-N is Phalen. LowerPhalenCreek.org is our website. Right now, we just started rolling with some Give to the Max Day fundraisers. So, and you know, if you want to follow us on social media, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and if you go to any of those social media sites or our webpage, right now would be an amazing time to help us raise some money. We have a $13,000 in challenge dollars made available to us by some great donors and friends of the organization, and we're trying to raise a match to that so we can unlock those challenge dollars.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, this portion of Native Roots Radio is dedicated to Kim, Uncle Curtis's wife, and my nanny. Happy birthday, Kim.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. We love our updates from our uncle, my daga, Uncle Curtis. Welcome. Tell us your name and give a shout-out to your wife, too, why don't you?
My name is Marshke Hanajinga. I walk on a white cloud. My colonized taxpayer name is Curtis West, and I do got to give a shout out to my baby girl and my beautiful wife Kim, and she wanted me to mention our cat today too. So let's say hello to Lucky. So I want to say ho-ho, I want to say ho-ho to all our family and relatives and friends in Four Directions. We pray all is well. You know, with this pandemic, we say mask up, social distance, and wash your hands. You know, another reminder I was going to tell you guys too out there. Is that the Governor Walz, he made a mandated a new new order. He said that bars and restaurants will be closed at 10 o'clock every night of the week. And the social distancing, there won't be a few customers coming in. So I want to give a thank you again to my Chuske here that he lets me express myself for a couple minutes and I try to get it over with right away. So I can do some birthdays. He's going to help me out with some events that we got real important events coming up that Chuske is going to let us know about, and I'll give some shout-outs. So, first of all, I'm going to start off with some birthdays. I want to say happy birthday to my Chuske, Noah Josephson. Yeah, he's an official teenager right now. And there's another one of our Native brothers that listens to the show all the time, and I don't know how old he is. I think he's getting close to elder age, but we want to say happy birthday to Timmy Arredondo, and he's listening in right now. So, we want to say happy birthday. And another one, a good friend of me and Chuske and Wendy's are, is we want to say happy birthday to Nicole Matthews. Happy birthday to you, Nicole.
Uh-huh.
And another one of our relatives, a real strong member of the Native American Church, we want to say he's listening today, too. So we want to say happy birthday to Skylar Claremont. And happy birthday, Skylar. Many more blessed ones. And keep up the good work on that drum. And anyway, there's another one over here. We want to say happy birthday to JB. Our Chuske, Jason Bass, you know, so he's getting up there too. He's long a tooth also. So I'm going to say happy birthday. Happy birthday. And then we want to say, this is kind of a birthday. I could put her in elder status too, but I'm just going to give a special happy birthday shout out to our honor, the judge from Ho-Chunk Nation, Mary Jo Hunter.
We love
wanna
Mary
say
Jo.
Happy birthday. We love her. And I want to give a reminder too. She's having a fundraiser for her birthday, and you can go on her site, and her fundraiser for the American Indian College Fund, and so we want to say you know, give her a donation if you can, you know. So we well, I'd like to say this about our elders too, you know, they're real important to us. They're our history, and they teach us well, you know. So I'm going to make a shout out to all our elders that are having birthdays out there. And remember, with this pandemic, please check in on them, and they need some groceries. They need something. Maybe got to get their medications picked up. Mm-hmm. Look after them, you know, you call them. But I want to give a happy birthday shout out to a lot of these good ones, and they're all good ones. But I want to say happy birthday to Gerald Blackhawk, his sister Geraldine Blackhawk.
Mm.
I want to say I don't know if I had it right, so I messed up. I apologize, but it's either Elvin or Kelvin, and I got it out of the Woduck. Elvin Greengrass. I want to say happy birthday to that. And Lois Lone Tree, Davy Lowe, and we want to give a special shout out right now too. You know, I want to give a shout out to the Jerry Ogunas, the Waboos, and he always, you know, he's on the. He goes out there and gets the information for me that I didn't hear about. So he wanted to give, I'm going to give him a thank you for mentioning the one that was on CBS Morning News or National News, the Brian Yazzie from Gathering Cafe over at the Minneapolis Hinden Center. Right there. So I want to say that much on that. You know, I want to give a shout out to, again, like I always want to, and I'm going to forever. I want to give a shout out to American Indian Movement, to Clyde, Frank, and Lisa, and all the other ones that do that, you know. So I want to give a shout out to American Indian Movement. I'm a proud Indian, man. And I want to give another shout out here to all you listeners out here in District 4 that we're going for, we got 3 seats open over there for legislators, but I'm pushing, I'm his campaign manager, unofficially, but I want to say a shout out for Robert Pilot for, District 4 legislator. So, you know, you can contact Robert or contact me, you know, one way or the other. But we got to sign that paper. It's coming up in December, you know. So, want to say that much. And like I said, shout out to Waboos, the rabbit over there, man. But that he did. He was cooking buffalo and wild rice on her, that Brian Yazzie over there at the gathering. And, I want to say, ask prayer warriors out there in you know, the areas all around, you know. I like for a prayer for my little Nunu, my little sister Sarah Snake LaPointe down in Winnebago, Nebraska. I ask for prayers like that, you know. And I ask for prayers again too for my little brother Lonnie McKee. He's battling that COVID-19. Oh. He's in the hospital right now. And like I said, I'd like to do another couple things before we get an event. I want to say congrats to Michael Rave from Black River Falls. He's the new executive. Business manager down there. And the other thing we're going to say too is that they still haven't decided yet for the nation that there's I got the scoop from a legislator down there. I won't say his name but it's facts. They still haven't figured out the attorney general for Ho-Chunk Nation or a treasury manager as of yet. So that's another one. Just, you know, stay tuned. And then I'm going to have my Chuska here help me out with some real important events, and then I'll go after him, okay?
Ho-ho, Pinagigi. Hey, I just want to give a shout-out to everyone that supports us through Patreon, and that's Patreon, Native Roots Radio Network. Really appreciate it. We wouldn't be on the air without you. Also, I want to give a quick shout-out to, what Give to the Max is coming up, and we're going to be supporting the Phelan Creek Project with Maggie Lorenz and that crew over there. We're really excited. And I just want to give a shout-out to a couple shows we have. The new show, Native Wave, on Tuesdays, 2 to 3. Of course, Pilots Progressive Party, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake right now, 1 to 3. On Saturdays, and then we do the symposium on Sundays at 7:30 to 9, and it's rebroadcast the next week. This week we're going to be doing it on the veterans, and we're going to have some veterans showing up and giving them some good thoughts. So back to you, Uncle Curtis, and thank you so much for what you do. Hey, so do you have a last thought or a last prayer or a last gaga?
Yeah, I got something that really, really hit the spot today, Chuska. You know, I usually go with some native wisdom or, you know, elder wisdom, stuff like that. But this is elder and native wisdom. And it's a prayer that I like to share. So it says, O Great Spirit, who made all races, look kindly upon the whole human family and take away the arrogance and hatred which separates us.
Oh, Pinagigi.
Oh.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors.
We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests, which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.